convenience on 4th, the Super Value on Commercial, or grocery checkout in the Nest to pick up some Trek coffee today.
Do you want to change the state of the world, but instead you keep buying material goods to satisfy whatever desire you have in that very moment? Me too. But now you can do both! Rock Shop and Community Thrift is a local vintage shop that fulfills your 1970s alt-chic fantasy while also supporting at-risk people through their compassionate and supportive work training program. All of their profits go to the PHS Community Services Society to support ongoing health care, harm reduction, and health promotion projects in Vancouver and Victoria. So stop by their two locations, Community Unisex on West Hastings or Community Frock Shop on Corral Street. And if you know any other local businesses that deserve recognition for their generous business practices or their contributions to the community, please DM us on Instagram at CITR and Discorder, because we would love to spotlight them. Because hey, if you can't stop buying, you might as well start supporting.
You are now tuned in to Off the Beaten Path here on 101.9 CITR.ca. I'm your host, Issa Arian. We do this every Tuesday, unless we're not here. But if you never listened to the show, if this is your first time, if you are a longtime listener, welcome, welcome. And it's glad to have you back. It's glad to be back. We have so much to talk about today. I mean, I say it all the time. No, actually, sometimes I come on and say that there's nothing to talk about. But what we do here is, you know, we talk a little bit about what's going on here locally, what's going on here in Canada, what's going on here around the globe. Sometimes we go, you know, to alternate planets to really find out what's kind of going on in the universe. And we do it all broadcasting from the unceded Musqueam, Coast Salish, Tsleil-Waututh, and Squamish Nations territories here live from the most western part of BC here from CITR deep in UBC's campus in the Nest. It's such a nice studio. Listen, if you never come by, you never donated any money, you should donate money to CITR.ca. Listen, they put on lots of good programming. This being one of them, it just provides an opportunity for the community to come out and just kind of talk about, you know, kind of talk about like what's going on in their life. What do people think is important? Like, what is the community saying? You know, and that's what it's about, except it's about, you know, just trying to find out what are some of those things that are making you laugh, but also things to make you go, all at the same time. You know, we like to keep a comfortable, complimentary amount of both and some music that will make you feel good. And there's a few feel-good stories. Hold on, I'm trying to change the microphone because I feel like the nice mic, the nice-looking one, the one that makes you feel cool, gives so much feedback in the headphones. It's for an unpleasant hour for myself, to be honest. I don't know how it sounds to you, but you know, we're going on a ride. So, if you're a long time listener, you noticed that I wasn't here, and that was because I just needed to take a break. So, like you know, oh, it sounds so much better. Like you know, I coach Little League football, and this year, you know, my team struggled a little bit. It's very interesting because I have a lot of friends who also coach Little League football and or high school football, which I still like Little League, same. You know, and it's just like we feel like we are. I mean, not only do we feel like it, but we talk about how like we're becoming, you know, those old people who are like, though these kids just not the same. And one, it makes me reflect on just to think that it's like, wow. One, I have, you know, been playing or coaching or doing something around football for a really long time, long enough where I can look at kids and see, like, many football lives, you know, like an entire football life, multiple different people older than me and younger than me. It's interesting. And then also, you know, that you can just totally forget about what it was like, what it was actually like. I saw this random, I don't know the proper word. This is another story. I don't really know the proper word for like talking about older people than me, you know, like people in their 50s, 60s, maybe, you know, like not old, but not elderly. I don't know, you know, older, aging, I don't know, you know. And so even when I'm at work and we're talking about, and I'm like talking about like, oh yeah, like older people, but I'm like talking to somebody who is of that age, I like don't know the right word to say. And I know I'm never like oh, I'm sorry or anything. I just like keep rolling with it, even if I say something that maybe might make somebody wince. I just don't know the proper word. But anyways, so I saw some older rap gentlemen. We're talking about, you know, how the violence is different. You know, the violence is different now. Kids are this way. When you look at, like, the actual murder statistics, it was way, way wilder when they were growing up. And they talk about this code that they had that they never really had. And so I feel like sometimes when I'm talking about the kids that I coach or kids in general, I often, you know, I'm talking about from my singular experience and not understanding that, like, there were a lot, like, I say the kids now are very soft, like, in a way that, like, it takes a lot of energy and effort to get the kids to make contact with each other, which is, like, a crucial part of football. Like, I felt like, as when I was a kid, personally, I'm like, that was just, like, an innate part sense within myself, just, like, this desire to create contact that these kids don't. And there's definitely some kids that do. But there are a lot of kids that don't. And I always remember, I'm like, damn, you know, kids, they just don't want to do this anymore. And I'm like, did kids ever want to do this? Like, I wonder, when you think about, like, when I think about all of the kids that I played with football from, like, when I was a little kid all the way to, you know, to my early 20s at Ohio, I'm just thinking, I'm like, there were probably so many kids that I grew up with that had no desire to play football. They probably went home and cried, or, you know, in practice they hid, you know, and all of these things that I'm looking at, like, a lot of the kids on my team do. I'm just like, kids didn't do that back in the day when absolutely they did. And it's probably worse because I feel like the coaches then, like, I fortunately had great coaches, but, like, you know, there wasn't YouTube or, you know, some kind of mandatory computer-based coach screening or, you know, education platform. It was just kind of, you kind of just made it up as you go along. There's also no cameras to, like, continue to show when coaches didn't have it right. You know what I mean? So I can just only imagine the kinds of things that people were put through. Also, but I do contend, I feel like this is something that I personally am okay with being on the margins of this, but I feel like kids need things like climbing the rope. I don't know if you climb the rope. We might have talked about this on the show a few weeks ago, but, you know, there's just some things, like, they don't play dodgeball. There's just some of those pressure situations that I feel like they did something, right? You know, I feel like there's a lot of times we kind of dismiss, you know, when I think about, like, those fitness awards and stuff like that. I'm like, I know that I exist in a space where, like, those things, not only did they came easy for me, but I also really wanted to excel in them. So I had both of the factors that kind of make something like that attractive to me to have in, like, my education curriculum. But I think I'm like, they did something, right? Like, the, you know, having to climb a rope or having to do the balance beam or, you know, or, like, practice at some type of routine or something like that. I'm like, those things did some, particularly physical, like, those things did something, I like to believe. And the kids don't have that anymore. And I'm like, you know what? Bring it back. They need to bring it back. I feel like that's one thing that kind of can easily go too far. Easily go too far. But yesterday saw Black Panther 2, and while I don't believe in spoilers, you know, I'm like, I feel like I should give you at least a week. I'm not going to spoil anything about the movie, but I just think that it is interesting. Listen, if you are want to see the movie and you don't kind of know the premise, I'm not going to tell you what the movie, like, how it goes. Like, it's a Marvel movie. How can, honestly, well, back to the thing, like, it's a Marvel movie. How can anybody spoil a Marvel movie for you? Like, how can you get a spoiler? Like, oh my God, I can't believe you spoiled the movie for me. As if, like, Marvel is some cinematic genius, you know, brilliantly written script that you, a plot twist comes and you had no idea that it was going to happen. You know, I feel like I've never seen an Ant-Man movie, but I know that he lives at the end, and I know that he defeats some monster. I know that there's going to be some type of superhero conflict where he may not be able to access his powers. Something like that, you know, anyways. So I'm going to be talking about Black Panther. If you know, don't want the movie spoiled, maybe you should change the channel. But if you don't care because you know that it's a Marvel movie, so you're probably either going to watch it or you're not going to watch it, then listen, you might learn something. But I thought that the movie was pretty interesting. I thought it was cool. I liked Black Panther. I liked the first one. I liked this one. I liked seeing, you know, beautiful black people on screen and just kind of doing the thing and just Wakanda, you know what I mean? Like, I just like the aesthetic. But there's a few things in the movie that I find to be just kind of nice and kind of weird at the same time. So, I don't know if you know. I thought it was interesting. So, Angela Bassett's character, the Queen, she, in the beginning of the movie, she says how she is daughter of Lumumba. And I don't know if you are familiar with your African history, but in the movie, they have a lot of Easter eggs and plant a lot of, I don't want to say subversives because it's Disney, but a lot of odes and nods, leans to black revolutionary figures. And so Patrice Lumumba was the first democratically elected president of the Congo and was subsequently assassinated by a CIA Belgian-backed coup in the Congo. And so, you know, and so for them to say, as in the movie, she talks about, you know, the things that she lost and mentions that she is the daughter of Lumumba. And I thought that was pretty interesting. If you have never heard about Patrice Lumumba, you should, or you find yourself, you know, trying to kind of understand a little bit more about the Congo, maybe, or about, you know, vibranium, which is, you know, like an, I don't know what the proper word is, but maybe it's an allegory for coltan. So like, if you think of the Congo and what Wakanda is in the movie, it's like, you know, it's just this naturally rich resource place where kind of the history is kind of like a what if, right? And if you, this is one of the things that I found was so maddening about education when I was growing up, is that in college, I feel like I didn't really start to read until I got to college. Like, that was like, I felt like I read a little bit growing up, like in middle school, and then high school, I didn't really read at all. I don't think I read a single one of the books that they make you read. Just did the test, you know what I mean? Because that's what they kind of care about. Anyways, but it wasn't until college that I started to read again, because I found, and what I really found was that the subject matter wasn't interesting. And I found a book called King Leopold's Soliloquy, and I thought it was in, it was written by Mark Twain in the early 20th century, I think in like 1900 or around there, and it's a soliloquy about King Leopold and his, you know, the colonization of the Congo. And, you know, it's written in a style that, you know, one would have been so interesting for me personally. I was like, in, they teach you Mark Twain books in, you know, teach you about Mark Twain in high school, even in AP or IB, but they don't really, they teach like the most boring, you know, non-interesting shit that he's probably ever written. And so if you are interested in Black Panther, you're interested, you're like, oh wow, I didn't know that they connected Lumumba, and you're interested in the Congo, there's a few books that I would read about it, but I would start with this one because you're probably familiar with Mark Twain. And you're like, wow, I didn't know Mark Twain was talking about this. Like, these are things that, you know, mainstream writers were talking about, but nobody was doing fucking anything about it. When we get back, we're going to talk about some, like, you know, I'm usually down with eco-justice protesters sometimes, but sometimes I don't understand. And maybe understanding is not up to me, but we're going to talk about it when you get back. Because maybe you might have a better understanding. And if you do, you can call in at 604-822-2487. That's 604-UBC-CITR.
On a boat, my flow straight water, I stress. But what standards, just rapper success, leave you capped in the flesh. I measure your surge like I sneeze, God bless. I remember having tea, living life on speed. Then my homie got wet, bumping Raekwon, whipping the ship. We had crayons in 16th, yeah. No, he ain't Trayvon, the news don't flex. I don't exercise freedom, the copper like not I, but might meet him. All for a dollar, suck and swallow like you eat. Better not cap that life y'all living in. If not strapped, I guess I'm the minimum. I don't act, you know I'm not feeling them. It's a waste if you lack taste and you lack base and you can't make hands race in a damn place. Now I'm on runs like I hit the 5K. Had
like to be a sponge when I lack the funds. Lost tons, and for I gained some clothes like to change them like reasons. My scars can't tame some. I'm easing to my season. If I'm leading the scoreboard, the rep ignore they cheating. I got my thought. If you stuck in the strife from Tel Aviv to be our streets, I smoke weed, get fried at Smash Restaurant. Had this stunt for plenty days. Low pay, ain't no way I want. Every day I was just afraid now to stay set ablaze and I can't. So what? Just afraid now to stay set ablaze and I can't. So what?
Better not cap that life here I live in it. If not strapped, I guess comes a minimum. I don't act and no, I'm not feeling them. I relapsed and got back killing them. Better not cap that life here I live in it. If not strapped, I guess comes a minimum. I don't act and no, I'm not feeling them. I relapsed and got back killing them.
Back it off the beam path here on 101.9 CITR.ca. And so one of the things that I've seen very quite frequently, which I feel like, you know, is one of those things is, you know, you see what they show you, and is that I see a lot of, you know, climate activists who are put, you know, throwing ketchup or some type of condiment on art and, you know, calling it, you know, calling attention to climate change and, you know, saying that people aren't going to, you know, people, this is how they need to get people to pay attention, you know. And I never see any people of color protesting like that, like going to a museum and throwing ketchup on a painting, you know, and then taking a picture in front of the painting. And it just kind of baffles me. So I saw that, you know, the CBC, they had an article today because some activists threw maple syrup on an Emily Carr painting to bring attention to stopping fracking. Fracking is the practice of like shooting tons and tons of water into the ground and then breaking up sediment so then they could like pull out the oil or natural gas or whatever out of the ground. And what it does is it leaves behind one absolutely wrecked landscapes and environmental systems, but it damages and pollutes the waterways, and because of the chemicals that they actually pump into the ground, and it can actually cause sinkholes, which is done in western Pennsylvania and eastern Ohio, and it is just absolutely terrible practice. And the only people who benefit are the people who own these mining companies, because you know, they obviously aren't doing anything to take care of the land, and you know, it's just bad. I think that is bad. I also think that, like, throwing condiments on paintings doesn't do anything. It does so little, in fact. It does so little, in fact, that the police won't even arrest these people. Listen, these people's names, I'm not going to say, because, you know, here at Off the Beaten Path, we don't snitch around here. And, you know, whenever we do know something that happened, we actually don't know anything that happened. We don't know who did it, and we don't know when it was done, who, why, what, I don't even know what you're talking about. And anyways, their names are in the article. They got their pictures in the article, and the police say no arrests have been made yet, although the gallery condemns vandalism. Now, if your protest was so impactful, they would have arrested you for it. Like, that's the thing. It's like, if your protest actually made a difference, they would come and arrest you. Or they would be a little bit upset. You know, the gallery condemns vandalism. The gallery isn't like employing security guards to stop the vandalism, because they understand that this absolutely it's nothing to do with fracking. Like, it's barely a protest. You know, I think, one is Canada. Canada is such an interesting place, because I find I always said that when I saw the convoy, like the convoy was the most coward protest I've ever seen in my life. People just driving around in their cars, not even running red lights, just driving around, stopping at the red light, going to the next one, honking, playing their goofy songs with their hockey sticks on the back. It was so laughable because in the fact that it was absolutely coward. You didn't even have to show your face. You didn't even have to stand outside. This is not the same thing. I mean, because you got to go get the maple syrup, you know, and take the picture. I guess that's brave, but it's not. Like today, which was crazy, I was just reading this, is that the activist Grandmaster Jay was sentenced to 7 years in prison. So if you don't know Grandmaster Jay, he basically started an armed militia in the United States after Breonna Taylor was murdered by the police. Like, basically, he's called the No Fucking Around crew, and he was he's from Ohio, and he basically started a militia group that legally was able to carry guns and brought guns to protest, and you know, and what, I don't know how to say it, you know, they had a militia, you know, there wasn't, it was very organized, and anyways, he was sentenced today with the maximum of 20 years in prison. But will serve mandatory 7.5 for showing up to protest with guns. Now, listen, I don't have to explain to you much about what this person might look like to you or what they were protesting, but the fucked up part is that this person is going to end up going to jail longer. His name is John F. Ferguson, a.k.a. Grandmaster J. He's going to go to jail longer than the police are who killed Breonna Taylor. Now, how much sense does that fucking make? Doesn't make any sense. It's actually maddening. It's one of those things where, you know, I in my lifetime have seen, I remember Clive and Bundy, these people pointing sniper rifles armed at the United States government, and then the United States government went home. They didn't shoot back. They didn't shoot, you know, tear gas. They didn't even kill anybody. This was over cattle. And so this is over you know, a murdered black woman, and show up with actual, like, in a coalition, like, you know, ready to protect the people, and, you know, sentenced 7.5 years. So when I look at the protests, like, you know, throwing ketchup or, you know, maple syrup on obviously it's not the same thing, but it's just the same thing. It's like, you know, they put you in jail if they actually think that you are actually a threat. You throwing maple syrup on there is actually not even going to stop them from fracking tomorrow. They'll still be fracking tomorrow. So, yeah, there's nothing really about that. It's just kind of the truth. I find a lot of measures to be just kind of self, I don't know what the word is, you know, self congratulatory, or I don't know, just kind of weird. I just think it's weird. Another weird thing before we get to the, oh, we got some actual funny stories to talk about, like a scammer who stole over $300 billion. But this is going to actually tend to talk about something a little bit more wholesome. The Girl Guides are renaming themselves from the Brownies so that they can be more inclusive. And, like, I find this both pretty funny and also, no, it's just funny. Yeah, it's because, like, okay, so I, you know, if you know me, I lived in Cleveland for a few years, and the football team's name is the Browns. You know, when I think of the Browns, I think of Brownies. Like, I don't think of, I just think that it's interesting that this is the thing that the Girl Guides believe is the racialized barriers for girls and women to feel like they belong. You know, calling the Girl Guides Brownies makes black you know, indigenous, you know, Indian, Hispanic, Asian, all types of different people feel uncomfortable to join. And I was just curious, as a market research professional, I would like to really find out, like, what kind of research that they did, because, you know, from just my preliminary hypotheses, would just suspect that that was probably not just the reason that people didn't join. Like, I don't think that the name Brownies is making people not join. Just from my experience with the Browns fan base, the Browns has a lot of Brown fans. You know why? Because they don't. Because it's not about the name. It's about the inclusivity, about how it makes people feel. You know what I mean? Like that, the Browns feels like an inclusive organization, because all you have to do is root for a shitty football team. And if you root for a shitty football team, other people who root for that shitty football team will also welcome you in, no matter what, really, because you have all decided to collectively suffer together. And so you will be welcomed. And I think that's kind of something along with the Girl Guides, except for they lack that inclusivity part, because if there's had inclusivity, I don't think the name would be an issue. And I feel like it's one of those things where it's like throwing maple syrup on a painting, where it's like, yeah, there's definitely probably something, you know, you're not getting to the root of what's actually going on here, which is I would 100% bet that there are structures and people within those structures that are causing people to not feel uncomfortable. It has nothing to do with the name, you know, is my hypothesis. But they're changing the name from one to two names that people will, you know, people in the Girl Guides will be able to choose in the future, you know, and maybe those names will help increase the inclusivity and membership to Girl Guides. I also just think Girl Guides, people are just probably over that type of stuff. You know, I don't know, like the Boy Scouts. Do people still send their kids to the Boy Scouts? Like, I remember a few years ago we talked about on the show people being in an uproar about how the Boy Scouts were letting in girl members or just non-boy members, and how it's going to ruin the Boy Scouts. And I was like, the Boy Scouts has been ruined by TV. TV made the Boy Scouts not cool. And I'm not sure if it was TV that did it, because I feel like there was at one point I wanted to be a Boy Scout, and then one point I was like, absolutely the fuck not. And I 100% guarantee or feel like TV has something to do with it. When we get back, we're going to talk about a pretty bad mugshot and why we might be in for a little trouble. I'm in a little trouble right now, as I can't get the damn music to work. But bear with me. We'll be right back.
What I could go for right now? Authentic flour tortillas pan-fried until golden brown.
Yum!
Or vegan taco kits filled with traditional Mexican chilies and spices.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Or how about vegan potato and chorizo taquitos?
How can I get these foods immediately?
Buy Lita's Mexican Foods.
Sounds delicious. Tell me more.
Lita's Mexican Foods is a female-managed, plant-based Mexican food innovator in BC. Their products come prepackaged and frozen at tons of local grocery stores around Metro Vancouver. Not to mention they can be cooked in under 10 minutes.
Wow, that sounds perfect for me. I've been so busy lately and dinner takes so long to make. Where can I get my hands on some Lita's Mexican Foods?
Lots of places. Whole Foods, Choices, Stong's, Vegan Supply, Donald's, and even UBC Bookstore. Hey, where are you going?
To buy some Lita's Mexican Foods. See you later.
See ya.
You wanna leave it in my way.
Back with Off the Beaten Path here on 101.9 CITR.ca. I was trying to figure out why the music was playing through my headphones, and I realized that the mic was on the whole time. It makes me a little bit nervous, guys. It makes me a little nervous. I'm not going to lie. Because sometimes I talk to myself, and sometimes I talk out loud. So, who knows? Anyways, the Earth's population is heading, is past 8 billion. And we're only going up. And, you know, I think it's interesting. There's so many, I feel like we were wronged. You know, we were all wronged. I used to read Scholastic News and just kind of imagine what the future would look like. And it's just kind of very interesting that so many, I mean, and I do this work for my job. You know, we talk about, you know, future setting. What does the future look like? What does the future look like, you know, a year from now? What does the future look like 10 years from now? Trying to understand behavior and predict what, you know, which direction that would push, like, the tides and the masses go towards. And I'm becoming pretty jaded in the idea that, like, you just can't pick it. You can't predict the future, you know. And I feel like that's what some people have learned, is that they're like, yeah, you can't predict it. You gotta just make it. And so that is how a lot of people operate. You just have to kind of create those things. And you can see that it's a lot more difficult than it imagines. It's like, you see, like, you know, look at Twitter. You know, they're trying to imagine what the future looks like, having a really difficult time working with the present. But thinking about the world's population being 8 billion, like, what does that mean to me, you know? That's what I try to think, like, what does the future of that mean? What does that actually mean to me? It means nothing. Because it's kind of amazing, right? Because we have 8 billion people on the planet. Like, at the turn of the century in 1900, there were about 1.5 billion people. So, you know, or I think 1.5 billion people. And so we have added, you know, like 8 billion people in such a short amount of time. You're like, wow, that's crazy. You know, we're feeding, you know, hopefully 8 billion, you know, like, hopefully. I don't know how many people are dying because they don't have enough food, which is crazy because we have enough food basically to feed all those people. We had enough people to feed, you know, the 7 billion people like 12 years ago and the 6 billion people like 15 years ago before that. And, you know, but we just have decided, nah, not going to do that. And so I think it's interesting, you know, always talking about these, you know, just kind of looking at these stats that, like, mean something to the individual. Like, it doesn't mean anything to me that we have 8 billion people on the planet. It's just kind of sad. Knowing that no matter how many people or how little people, you know, kind of the material conditions really don't change for a lot of people. You know, I work in a business that is, you know, what we do is we help create demand for products, which helps get, you know, like, so like, not things that people need, barely people, things that people want. And the little bit of, you know, brain power that they spend trying to decide whether they want it, and if they want it, which kind of thing do they want? Like, you know, I'm trying to exist right in those milliseconds where people is making decisions, and that allows me to eat. And I'm like, but my job is not necessary. And their probably job is probably not necessary. We could probably still eat. World probably wouldn't make that much of a difference. You know, this past weekend I was sailing, and just, sailing is kind of one of those things where you just, the money that people talk about is, even the small money in sailing, you just like, I just don't understand. It doesn't make sense in your brain. Like, you're like, this is illogical. And how do you all have this much money? Where is this coming from? You know, but there's people who can't eat. It doesn't make any sense. Anyways, 8 billion people seems like a lot. I thought this was an interesting note, is that when indigenous people use their status cards, there is a near universal experience of racism when you're using status cards. And you're like, I'm like, I think about that too. I'm like, where does that resentment come from? You know, like a store clerk takes out, you know, takes someone's identification and sees the status card, and then they get mad. You're like, why are you mad? They have to show you a status card on the land that their ancestors were born on. You know, that doesn't make any sense. But you're mad. Yeah, it's like when I saw that and it's like, wow, there's so many universal experiences between you know, intra-group experiences, like, you know, that you kind of would never know. Like, I mean, obviously that's something that I would assume, is that people were racist when they pulled out a status card. Like, yeah, I would assume that. But, like, you know, just to hear it, it's universal, you know, universal experience. And then, you know, nothing, that's just it. It's just a universal experience. And we just move on. Before we move on to kind of what's going on in the national level, you know, got some funny stories, some funny scammer stories, actually. I want to highlight this Black Canadian nonprofit that has opened a store down on Granville Island. You should go check out just kind of the things that they are selling in there. Listen, they're from food to clothes to art. The Black Business Association of BC celebrated the grand opening of the UEL, which stands for Unity, Excellence, and Legacy, on November 5th. The association says it has been looking for a space to sell products made by Black Canadian community in BC, and they finally found one in Granville Island. So listeners, like, Granville Island, a lot of stuff you could do. Go down there, grab some donuts, go and shop at the UEL, and go buy something, because that is the way of how, listen, we just have to exist in this forsaken place. But listen, but people are making some good things, and you should go check out from some local people and put your money where presumably maybe your mouth is. When we get back, we're going to talk about some dystopian parts of our future. I mean, it's some more dystopian. We talk about it quite a bit, but just kind of how people think that putting a price on nature can be a solution to environmentalism. And I think that that is the exact opposite way we should be going.
Baby, won't you let me ride? Tell me what you like. I can't read your mind, bad as I want to. I really want you so. Baby, won't you let me ride? Tell me what you like. I can't read your mind, bad as I want to. I really want you, girl. You could be the one, you could be my favorite. We could be in love if we keep dating. Baby, I could beat it up, I can catch the fade with it. Take the mask off, I can put my face in it. You ain't got a trip, we can vacation. Take you all around the world, I'll get you paper planes. If I only hit it once, it would be a shame, wouldn't it? Tell me what you want, I'm tired of debating. Cause I can do you wrong if you won't, babe. Would it keep me on your mind long enough, babe? Should I be nice? Should I be rude? Do I text twice? Do I play cool? I could do it all if you want, babe, babe. Baby, won't you let me ride? Tell me what you like. I can't read your mind, bad as I want to. You let me ride. Tell me what you like. I can't read your mind, bad as I want to. I really want you.
Oh, you can be the one, you can be the only. If you wanna be my girl or just a homie, I can give you love, I could play it cool for you. I could pick you up or send a pull for you. If I use my tongue, baby, would you like that? If you wanna bite, baby, girl, I'll bite back. I could show you some, this could be a lesson. So tell me what you want, I'm tired of the guessing, baby. I could do you wrong if you won't, babe. Will I keep me on your mind long enough, baby? Should I be nice? Should I be rude? Did I text twice? Do I play cool? I could do you wrong if you want, baby. Baby, won't you let me ride? Tell me what you like. I can't read your mind, bad as I want to. I really want you so.
Baby, won't you let me ride? Tell me what you like. I can't read your mind, bad as I want to.
Back with Off the Beaten Path here on 101.9.ca. Listen, tell a friend to tell a friend to tune in every Tuesday from 8 to 10. We have Crimes and Treasons, the hottest hip-hop and R&B in Canada. And then from 10 to 11, you got me. Listen, we're talking about some funny shit. We're talking about some interesting things. And maybe we're talking about something that you've never heard of. So tune in on Tuesdays. Listen, what else are you going to do? It's Tuesday. Enrich yourself. You deserve it. So mentioned that, you know, there's an island on the BC coast where the government has come up with what, you know, with a creative way to, you know, to preserve the environment. And what they want, what they have done is they have ascribed dollar values to the environment. So I think there's a waterway system, and they, I think, said that it is valued at around $6.5 million, and this allows them to, you know, this allows them to basically treat it as like a, you know, as an asset, you know, as you would treat, you know, a tractor or something like that. And so they can borrow against it, and they can they can invest in it, and they can, you know, I guess properly maybe raise equity within it, and, you know, use it as a financial instrument, you know, as a way to preserve it. And it's, to me, that's really sad. It's like the final step, you know what I mean? As we have kind of commodified what a river is, you know, rivers are invaluable. There's no dollar value to a river. I think we have seen that. You know, we've seen that here in BC as we think about the amount of tankers that are off the coast. And what does an oil spill cost? You know, what does an oil spill cost cleanup look like? Can the cost ever be recouped? Is the cost intergenerationally? You know what I mean? So how can we begin to start putting monetary values on land when the cost is everything? doesn't make any sense. And so I think that it's a slippery slope. Once you start, you know, once you say this Riverway is $6 million, listen, there's people who got that. There's people who got that. Like, one thing I have learned is that there are people who got that. Like, their money is crazy. They're talking about Jeff Bezos and Jay-Z partnering to buy the Washington football team. Listen, Jeff Bezos and Jay-Z partnering to buy the Washington football team is like Jay-Z and me partnering to buy the Washington football team. That's what it's like. That's how much money Jeff Bezos has compared to how much money Jay-Z has. It is like Jay-Z being like, hey, Issa, you want to partner and buy the Washington football team? I'm like, hell yeah. You know? Because that's the scale of the money is crazy. People got the money. So if you're like, yeah, our town river that we love so much is worth $6.5 million. Somebody got that, they can buy it. And then once you put the dollar value on it, then they can do what they want. Then now they own it. And I think that's the problem is that there's literally nothing else left to own. And so they own everything and they're renting it back to us. Listen, our whole lives are just, we're being rented. Like I was actually going to do this exercise for myself, but maybe you could do this exercise for yourself as well. Just like think of how many things that you have to pay for every month, like a subscription service, and think of like how much of your life is like a rent that you're just renting your silly little life. It's pretty sad. So sad that I found this actually to be funny. So, you know, at TSA, they just found in Miami, Fort Lauderdale, a raw chicken going through the TSA, and inside the raw chicken was a 9mm handgun. And one, I feel like this has to be staged by TSA, right? Like, I'm such an internet skeptic that I feel like there's not a single video that I watch on the internet. Even if I'm entertained by it, I'm like, oh, that's got to be some type of it's got to be staged, because all the good shit is staged. Like, while reality is stranger than fiction, a lot of reality is staged, you know, like that. It's just one, we are living in like one big ass, because even those people who are like social media stars or social media, you know, influencers, they're just renting fame. They're not, you know, like I think when we think of traditional celebrities or movie stars, like bankable movie stars where people just come out. I saw a quote, Jennifer Aniston had a quote a few days ago. I thought it was, you know, it felt like somebody complaining, but it's kind of true. It's just like, you know, we don't have movie stars. People are just renting fame, and they constantly are paying their price every day. And even if they're recouping a little bit, they have to give a little bit of themselves every day. You know, and like these, you know, very parasitic relationships that exist between like content creator and content consumer is, that's what it is. It's like just stealing a little bit of each other's attention every day until we're all just renting everything from each other. And it's so crazy because there's like, I remember just a few years ago, you think like people house sitting was like a job, right? Or it still is a job for like really, really rich people. Like house sitting was a job. Now people ask you to pay to stay in their house for 1 month while they're gone for the holidays. You're like, no, fuck you. Why would I stay at your house for the holidays? So you want me to water your plants, but I have the privilege of paying your rent so that you can stay there. It's like, no, that's not how it works. House sitting people used to pay to have somebody stay at their house. It's just backwards. You know, just think of how much are you renting, you know, in your life? But to the story is that, listen, Nigerians are some of my favorite people in the world. So many amazing things come out of Nigeria. You know, music and food and culture and stories, storytellers, actors, athletes, you know, politicians, just an amazing group of people. And you know, one of the things that they do real well is the scamming. So a Nigerian social media influencer was sentenced to 11 years for conspiring to launder $300 million. Now, they says conspiring, but he stole the $300 million. And he only had to pay back 11. That means he's sitting on about $200 million, $250 million, because I think they took his cars and his houses. Somewhere he's got $250 million. What a king. What a king. When he gets out, he's going to be living it up. Listen, I just, it comes to a scam like $300 million. Like there's another story about this man who sold a bank of an airport that didn't exist for $230 million. $230 million. Then we hear about the FTX, the exchange, the crypto exchange, FTX, that was on, they had their patches on Major League Baseball umpires' shirts. They had their name on the arena, and they didn't have any money. It's so crazy. Honestly, like, it's so crazy that I'm out here renting my silly little life, and there's people out here who are just making. That dude owed, the dude who owned the FTX, oh man, we can get into this next week, had an alleged net worth of $32 billion when he actually had negative $8 billion. That's insane how you can just scam people for billions. Like, you know, you think you're getting over, you know, getting a few extra $100s. There's lots of scammers getting a few $1,000s. People are getting billions of dollars. Legal scams. It's kind of wild. But that's it. That's the show for this week. When we'll be back here every week. Got so much good music on this week, which was, we had Levon Kali with Do You Wrong, Glico Dealer, Ramaz with 7 Hours, and Joyce Wright with Ice Tea. You should check out all of the music. Listen, we got a playlist going. We do this every week, Tuesday, 10 to 11. Tune in, you know, and never feel like you have to wait until, you never feel like you have to wait until the shindig or until any event to give to CITR. Just give your money. It's the holidays. Be merry. I'm out.